January 6th, this past Wednesday, marks a season in the Christian calendar called Epiphany, and today's traditionally been called Epiphany Sunday. Epiphany is bookended by two high seasons of the Christian year. It comes just after the Advent and Christmas, which you just celebrated, and it precedes Lent and Easter, which comes in February this year, quite early. Easter is quite early this year. I guess one can call it the season of Epiphany, as the time is traditionally devoted to the study and reading of the life of Jesus, rather than the teachings of Jesus, which comes in the ordinary year season, which follows Lent and Easter. The word epiphany comes from the Latin and Greek, and it literally means a sudden perception or insight into a divine reality through revelation. In other words, epiphany is a time in which we discover or learn and gain insight into a divine truth. And the particular reality or the truth that the epiphany season points to is in regard to the nature of Jesus, who he is and where he comes from. Okay. So until the season of Lent, which comes early in February this year, as I said, we'll be looking at the life of Jesus to gain some insight into his nature and to his identity. And traditionally, the first reading in the Epiphany is the baptism of Jesus' stories. Now, what's really amazing and interesting thing about the baptism story is that all four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, tell the story of Jesus' baptism. Now think about this. Given that only two out of the four Gospels tells the birth narrative of Jesus, and the fact that all four Gospels tells the baptism of Jesus story is quite interesting to me. It shows you just how important this event is and was. What's so amazing about the Luke's version, though, and I don't know if you caught it or not in the reading, is that there is actually no mention of who baptized Jesus or where he was baptized, even though we all know the answer, don't we? Who baptized Jesus? John the Baptist. Where was he baptized? In the Jordan River. Now, we get those facts from the other Gospels, but not in Luke. In fact, Luke mentioned just before our reading that Herod had already imprisoned John. Or not already imprisoned John, but that John was in prison. Now, the timeline is unclear, okay? But it's clear that Luke is not interested in John the Baptist, who baptized him, where he was baptized, or how he was baptized. Now, I think Luke, as the truth teller, edits these details not because they are untrue, not because they're unimportant, but because Luke's focus and interest is in what happens after the baptism. So he eliminates the significance of John or the Jordan River, which Matthew tells us in great detail. In fact, Luke gives no details at all about the baptism itself, but it seems as though Luke is anxious to move on to the story about what happened following the baptism than in the baptism itself. It is clear that Luke's storied way of telling this event is clearly designed to focus on this final piece of what happens following the baptism of Jesus. And by this editing, Luke points us towards and helps us to key on this main verse, verse 22, which ended our reading, which said, "You are my son, the beloved. With you I am well pleased." For Luke, this is the most important event, most important thing to grasp about the baptism of Jesus. So what is it that we learn? Okay. Why is Luke so anxious, so hypersensitive to pointing this as the most important event? What we learn from this verse is this. Jesus is the Son of God who enjoyed a loving, an empowering relationship with the Father. Now, I can spend several hours, I think, unpacking all this verse, this saying from heaven says to us. But in the interest of time, let me jump right to the application and see what it might say to us, might be saying to us. Now, what is so important to grasp about this loving relationship Jesus enjoyed with the Father is that it is the pattern that shapes our relationship with God and others. Okay? Because all of us, as I said in the children's story, because we are made in the image of God, the triune relationship of empowerment and love shared by the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit is the very foundation of the kinds of relationship we are to experience in our own lives as well. Okay? In other words, just as the Father spoke directly and clearly to his Son, Jesus, "You are my Son, the Beloved, in whom I am well pleased." Okay? That relationship should define what all of our relationship with God and with others should look like. Okay? This is the application side of this story. Let me ask you this question. If the triune love and empowerment and communication is the defining mode of our relationship with other people and with ourselves, in fact, do you hear these words in your heart? How often do you hear within your own minds and hearts, "You are my beloved sons and daughters in whom I am well pleased"? Either from God in your heart and mind, or through it being voiced by other people around you. And when I say hear, I don't mean hearing mere words or flattery, but hearing it in the sense that it is a heartfelt experience of love and encouragement in the deepest part of you. Or it's the inner dialogue that only you can hear, okay? The words spoken to you by other, or the words spoken to you by others around you, echo only words of condemnation, judgment, and criticism. Do you think that God is well pleased with you? This phrase, "I am well pleased," comes from the Greek phrase, which literally means to have a high and good opinion of something or someone. Now, do you, in the deepest part of you, think that God has a good and high opinion of you? And do you hear those words in bodily form, descending like a dove through the voice of others around you? So, for example, in the children's story, I used to juxtapose two words, beautiful and ugly. Are you inclined to experience that voice in you that says, "I am beautiful"? Or far too often you pass by the mirror as you're shopping in the mall and think, "Ooh, that didn't look right. It must be the mirror." Now, to help those of you who find hearing the voice of encouragement, love fleeting, okay, where these words, "You are my sons and daughter in whom I am well pleased," are not innate to your heart and mind, let me share my personal story with you. I grew up under two parents who truly loved me and cared for me and did what they believed to be true and right. But the culture in which they grew up and the culture in which they raised me and my sister was a honor and shame-based culture based on the teachings of the famous Chinese philosopher named Confucius. Not that he was confused. He wasn't confused at all. In fact, his name was Confucius, and he had a huge impact in Asian culture, particularly in the Korean culture, which is called the Neo-Confucius culture. Now, what Confucius taught was quite interesting. Confucius said that praising and showing affection to your children or even loved ones is a fool's errand. only a fool will show outward and communicate love in an outward way to their loved ones. Because why? Because of course your children must know that the parents love them. So why do the obvious? It is apparent and obvious that they already know that they love you. Therefore, the task of parenting is not to show affection and to communicate words of love and encouragement, but actually to use critique, rebuke, and correction to take flight from shame. Therefore, you can receive honor. You see the logic of that? Actually, there is logic in this. Before we criticize it, there is a great deal of logic to his culture. So basically what he said was, do not do what is obvious to your children. Children already know you love them. What you must do is correct them. Correct them so that they can avoid shame. Correct them so they can attain honor. And through attainment of that honor, they will be grateful for your parenting and teaching. So my entire communication and dialogue with my parents were based on criticism of what I needed to correct. Okay. What I did right or good was never communicated, not because I didn't have any. Well, I'm sure I had limited good. But even when I did, even when I had them, those were never pointed. But the things which, and there were numerous lists of things, as you can imagine, of things that needed correction and teaching and rebuke. And so I heard the voice of criticism constantly in my life. Criticism in the honor shame-based culture is actually a expression of love. Okay, did you get that? In an honor-shame-based culture, criticism is the expression of love. I told this story, kind of amusing story. In my previous congregation at Briarwood, there were lots of kind of Asian people, and conversation with Asian congregant members were quite different from the normal Presbyterian Caucasian members, because Asians would come out and say things like, "Holy smokes, Kevin, you've gained a lot of weight. Who needs friends when you have enemies like this?" Now, those of you who don't understand this kind of communication, one of the things about the Asian culture is that noticing or critique of you is an expression of their love and concern for you. They've noticed the change in your body form. And so they mention it, they verbalize it. And they verbalize it not to criticize you, but to show you that they're noticing the change in your status and so forth. Anyway, it's a very confusing, it's taken me 40 years to figure out this culture, and this is where I developed this constant twitch in my head. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. And I am sure that those of you who grew up in the Irish culture, even in the Ukrainian culture, a couple of people came up to me afterwards, you don't have to be Asian to experience this kind of family dynamic, but I'm sure many of you have had this similar experience as well. The problem is this. This critical voice was so frequent and common that I'm not even sure when it happened, but it became part of my inner voice. So that the only voice I hear inside of me, the inner critic, if you will, the conscious voice that you hear inside of your head, the only voice I hear is voice and words of criticism and critique, judgment, and at times condemnation. It happened this morning when I was getting dressed. Because getting dressed and how you wear your clothes in public is a huge deal in the honor and shame culture. And every time I put on clothes, I don't even have to think about it. It happens to me and I can't stop it even when it does. And the voice inside of my head says, "Are you going out dressed like that today? Am I okay?" The words, "You are my son, my beloved, in whom I am well pleased," are not innate voice in my heart and mind. They're not. The voice that says, you are not my son, not good enough, not doing the right things, and these are the things you need to correct, that voice I hear constantly in my head. This is why the baptism story, that the heavens opened up and the Father communicated. Notice he speaks not as a third person, but directly, you. You, my son, my beloved, in whom I am well pleased. This is the relationship defined in the Trinity. And my contention is that this is not a unique event between Father and Son, God and Jesus, but that this is the defining relationship that should shape all of our lives. And this voice from heaven is not the only voice that's communicated to him, the perfect Son of God, but that this is the very voice that you and I were designed to hear constantly in our heads and in our minds. And this is the very pattern of relationship and very pattern of communication that you and I are designed to share with other people. Not that they're ugly and inadequate, stupid and dumb and wrong, but that they're beautiful, made in the image of God, that they are wonderful and amazing, and that they are beautiful in a kind of unique way that no one else is. And that we are to be like doves who descends from heaven in bodily form. I don't know how else doves descend from heaven other than the bodily form, but we are to tangibly manifest that voice to one another, to others, and to ourselves, and to God in this voice and tone. Yeah? This is why this passage is so important. This is why I think all four Gospels include this kind of story. Now, here's the challenge and the problem, though. The challenge and the problem is that many of us, including me, probably have the inner critical voice so wired into us that we no longer can voice words of love and encouragement to ourselves or to others. Far too often, I bet you, maybe I won't bet you, but let me suggest that words of condemnation and judgment of those around you is far easier than it is to see the good and the beautiful thing in the person around you. Is that true? It is. Long before you can stop yourself, you can just scan a room, and immediately, if you're allowed to speak the voice that is saying going on inside of you, I bet you more times, 9 times out of 10, you will have words of inner critic, judgment, and condemnation come up long before words of love and encouragement comes up. Will you agree with me? It is that for me. And it has taken a long time to be able to switch that voice, to switch the channel, so that I can hear the channel that comes from heaven, which says, you are my son, the beloved, in whom I am well pleased, so that I can hear it over and over again, because that's not the voice I hear in the radio station that I'm tuned to in my heart and mind. Okay? Are you with me? Here's how it goes. Here's how we change the channel. Okay? In Philippians chapter 4, the call to worship that we began with, okay, Paul instructs his people, because I think he knows the criticism and the judgment that is pending when we see the world and see the people around us. And so he says this about how we begin to change. And he says, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Now think about the worst person you know. Guarantee you there is nobility, praiseworthy, beautiful, wonderful, amazing things about that person and that being. We should focus on them. You know, after the first delivery, the first sermon in the first service, I thought about this. You know when this comes out? It comes out during eulogies at funerals. But why do we wait for them until they're dead? Why do we wait for them until we say these things to them when they're living? Why can't we do that Monday, Friday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday? Why do we wait for them when they're dead and can't hear us? Well, maybe they can, but aren't here to hear it. Nobility, praiseworthy things. Pick those out. But it takes patience and kindness. patience mostly, because it's quicker to get to the criticism and the judgment than it is to find nobility and praiseworthy thing. It takes time and effort and intentionality and patience to see the nobility and the greatness of people, and to have the courage to be able to communicate that truth to the person in a non-flattering way, but in a truthful way. It is a tough task, because that's not what we are raised to do. We are far better judges than we are encouragers, which means it's a spiritual discipline to change that pattern of communication so that we can be loving and empowering voice in heaven. The person that we are supposed to identify with in this story is the dove. Dove which descends from heaven in bodily form. That bodily form means tangibly manifested so that it can be seen, touched, and heard. The child that's sitting next to you should not only know in their mind that they're loved, but they should be told and touched and hugged into knowing that truth. Yes? That's the bodily form. Tangible ways. Now, I got a challenge for you in 2016 New Year. I don't know if you do New Year's resolution. I already broke mine, so it's okay. Okay? But the challenge is this. What if you, as a mother and father, husband and wife, sons and daughters, as co-workers, as neighbors, can become a dove of heaven which descends in bodily form to communicate that truth? You are my son, my beloved, in whom I am well pleased. It's about learning a new language, isn't it? New way of speaking, new tonality, new approach, new voice that empowers and lifts others up to see the good in others and to be able to communicate that. You can only do that if you hear it yourself inside of you. And this is where the spirituality and the discipline comes in. Begin to hear it for you from God, and then go out and begin to communicate that truth to others. And may the words of encouragement of heaven lead and guide you in your relationship with others in the coming year. Amen.